Welcome to the Planet Prana Yoga and Meditation Podcast with your host, Zen Jen. My mission is to spread awareness about the practice of yoga and to shine a spotlight on the amazing yoga community of Cleveland, Ohio. Practice, connect, grow, and heal. Hello, everyone. I am your host, Zen Jen, and this is episode 31 of the Planet Prana Yoga and Meditation Podcast. Happy New Year. It is great to be back with more episodes for 2018. As always, thank you so much for your continued support, and thank you so much for listening in today. Today's episode is sponsored by Vision Yoga and Wellness in the Ohio City neighborhood of Cleveland. Vision has two studio locations and offers over 30 yoga classes and wellness services with a full staff of certified yoga instructors, licensed massage therapists, and Thai yoga massage practitioners. Students practice at Vision Yoga and Wellness to start a solid foundation of practice, deepen their current practice, and to join a community of visionaries. Vision offers private and group yoga classes and wellness services 7 days a week in two locations. Yoga classes range from deep stretch, yoga basics and beginner's flow, to open level and powerful flow. For those in pain, recovering from injury, or just want stress reduction and anything else, Vision offers massage therapy, Thai yoga massage, yoga therapeutics, sports massage, cranial sacral therapy, and Reiki. They also hold events and workshops, certifications, yoga teacher trainings, educational seminars, and couples massage workshops. Vision space is available for rent for private events or trainings. And Vision Yoga and Wellness is embedded in the community. They are passionate about facilitating your wellness goals and also welcoming you into their all-inclusive community. Thank you, Vision Yoga and Wellness, for sponsoring today's podcast episode. Go to visionyoga.net today to get more information or to sign up for a class or a wellness treatment. In addition to announcing our sponsor, I'd also like to announce that I am back to teaching regular weekly group classes and monthly workshops at Vision Yoga and Wellness. Join me on Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. or Saturdays at 8:30 a.m. for Beginner's Flow. I'm also really excited to share another episode released today. Episode 31 is about core walking for pain relief, and it is an interview with Jonathan Fitzgordon. So you might be thinking, why are we talking about walking for pain relief? Isn't this a yoga podcast? Well, yes, it is. Thank you. And Jonathan is a yoga teacher whose training in yoga and his personal experiences with pain and injury inspired the manifestation of core walking for pain relief. It's quite a story, and I'm positive many of you will be able to relate to dealing with chronic pain as a result of habitual structural imbalances, emotional imbalances in the body from injury or otherwise, that you may or may not be aware of or know how to correct. So I was given a core walking session as part of my research for our interview, and it was extremely enlightening. As a yoga teacher, I thought I had really great posture and a strong core, but for some reason, I still have some mild chronic pain in my feet and lower back. Jonathan pointed out several imbalances in my stance and gait and assigned some basic core strengthening exercises to counterbalance my imbalances and to bring my physical structure back into balance. He also showed me how to walk properly in a way that my bones are aligned for allowing my nerves to flow properly to help eliminate pain. It all felt really weird to me that I had to retrain myself to walk as a 48-year-old woman. I could really use a refresher with Jonathan, and he did mention that it sometimes takes several sessions for many of his clients to begin to break patterns that are not serving them. Habits can be very hard to break, and personally, I'm still working on it every time I go for a walk. In our interview, we discuss his story and what inspired him to manifest this program, and some more details about the program and how you can access it. We also followed up our discussion on what I felt after my session. We go a little deeper and discuss the psoas muscles, the importance of core strength, and the concepts of proprioception and kinesthetic awareness, and how to tune into the awareness of our own habitual patterns. Be sure to check out Jonathan's website, corewalking.com, for lots of resources, his bio, and information about how to work with Jonathan. There is a link to his website in the show notes. I will add, this is a longer interview with lots of great information. I do suggest listening to the entire interview altogether, but feel free to pause at any point and come back to it later. Some reminders about the podcast. The podcast lives at my website, planetprana.com. There you can link to the episode post with show notes and resources about topics we discussed in the conversation. You can listen to the episode there as well. Consider leaving a review on iTunes, please, to help my podcast get more exposure. And please consider sharing with friends and family who you think might enjoy or benefit from the content of this podcast. As always, feel free to reach out to me anytime with an email, planetprana@gmail.com. And I'd like to finish the introduction, as always, with a reminder of your true nature. You are a radiant and boundless being of light and vibration. Be guided by love and compassion for yourself, all beings, and for our beautiful home, planet Earth. Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy episode 31. I'm here today with Jonathan Fitzgordon of Core Walking for Pain Relief in his home studio in Shaker Heights, Ohio. Thank you so much for joining me, Jonathan. All
right.
That's okay. Yeah, we all need to have a little...
something.
Yeah. Yes, good idea. So thanks for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure, Jen. Thanks so much for interviewing me.
It's great to have you. I'm welcome to Cleveland.
Thanks so much. It's been almost 3 months now, so yeah. It's no longer welcome. I'm here.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's start from the beginning. I always kind of like to get your background to begin. So tell everyone your yoga story. When and where did you find the practice? And then when and why did you begin teaching?
I actually practiced when I was 6 years old for about a year. My mother was taking yoga at the local HES, the Hebrew Educational Society, in Canarsie, Brooklyn. And she needed something to do with me in the afternoon, so she put me downstairs in the yoga and tumbling class. And
yeah.
I was really good at it right from the beginning. Like, my family is way too loose in their joints and open-hipped. Mm-hmm. And so 6 years old, I was doing full splits.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, how do you do... You know, it was a really interesting and very empowering thing, but
yeah.
I was a six-year-old boy, and turned seven, I was just not... I said I didn't want to do it anymore. I'd rather be at the park with my friends. So that was my yoga life as a pre-10-year-old. And then when I was in my 30s, I wasn't doing very much. I was not inactive. Like, I was an active kid in terms of generally running around, but I didn't play any sports. I played baseball for like a few years really badly and then told my parents I'm not having fun, and they didn't make me stick with it, you know. So, but I rollerbladed. That was my big thing in my 20s and early 30s. I was rollerblading a lot, like, you know, mega miles. And I was rollerblading over the Brooklyn Bridge one day, as I like to do, and I saw a friend of mine up ahead of me on his bike, and I hadn't seen him in a while, and I'm screaming and yelling, so I actually had to skate really hard. And it's, you know, Brooklyn Bridge is all wooden slats, so it's kind of not the easiest thing to skate. And I caught up with him, and I said to him, I said, "Wow, you look great. Like, what are you doing?" And he said, "I'm doing yoga." And I said, "Oh, I'm coming. I'll be there tomorrow." And it was 1995.
Oh, yeah.
So it was Jiva Mukti on the Lower East Side when they were on 2nd Avenue.
Yeah.
And I walked into this place, and I was home. Like, wow. I really feel like it was something about walking in the door that connected me to being six again. Mm. And I always say that to my students, that when you're in a yoga classroom, it's like being back in kindergarten where you have mats and blankets and you take a nap at the end, you know, like it's this really great thing.
It's the best.
I totally felt that was it for me, and I got into it right away. I started doing it 6 days a week.
Wow.
And it was just not a very, it was popular, but it wasn't, it hadn't exploded yet.
Yeah.
And within about 2 months, I started doing Ashtanga. Mm-hmm. And like the Ashtanga program was six people. Like it was this tiny little program.
Yeah.
And every one of those six people all own yoga centers. Like everyone ended up becoming yoga teachers and owning yoga centers. And so it was a really great experience for me. And that was the beginning of, that's my yoga story from the start.
Wow. So were you taking classes with David Life and Sharon Gannon and...
So for 2 months I took classes with David and Sharon and this woman, Ruth Lauer and Allison West.
Yeah.
And then when I didn't leave particularly, I still took some of those classes, but I went to Ashtanga. It was mostly with David and Ruth and a couple of other like guests. We had guest teachers and stuff, but you know, Ashtanga is different. So it wasn't taking class as much anymore, but that whole crowd.
Yeah. Wow. That's a amazing crowd.
It was you know, it taught me a lot in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And it was a trip of a place.
Yeah. I've heard that, especially back then.
Yeah.
So when and why did you begin teaching?
So I wasn't interested in teaching. I've always just been a learner. Mm-hmm. So I basically bought every single book in the Jiva Mukti library and didn't get to them for a few years, but I bought them all. And looked at them while I sat on my couch. And so I had an interest in learning more. I was just in love with the practice, you know, and I was a waiter and I was a carpenter. So I was just doing what I did and paying my bills and not a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
And I had an interest in learning, but not an interest in teaching. But then I got hurt. I hurt my knees.
Oh,
and, that didn't go very well, and Ashtanga is not an alignment-based practice at all. So, I'm my body is just too loose, too open, full turnout, like, you know, like, in addition to the yoga when I was a six, me and my brother would wrestle in lotus position, and I could put both feet behind my head my whole life, like, and I didn't know that was so bad in a lot of ways, but when it came to yoga, it did not serve me.
Yeah.
And like what I tell people is I warm up in ankle to knee pose, right? An ankle to knee pose kills people.
Oh gosh.
So at Jiva Mukti, I would do that. And they go, "How do you do that? That's unbelievable." I'm like, it's just what I do.
Yeah.
And it turned out that that's why I got hurt, right? Like I don't have I don't have tone in certain muscles. I'm just too loose.
Yeah.
And I started to break down and didn't understand why or how, and then I hurt my knee pretty badly actually playing softball, and there's something popped in my knee, so it wasn't a yoga injury, but it was set up by the work I was doing. And you know, my knee was hurting, and I would say my knee hurts, and they would say, "Well, it's a rite of passage, you know, or you got to work through it," and none of that served me.
No, God.
And then when that pop happened, I ended up in you know, I actually got insurance to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was kind of interesting. I went to the New York Rangers. I'm a big hockey fan. I went to the New York Rangers team doctor, and I thought that was exciting.
Yeah.
I basically walked into his surgery factory, and he said, you need surgery, right? And I actually had a ticket from Mysore, India. I had a ticket to go to Mysore and practice Ashtanga and study with Patabi Joyce.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think he somewhat muttered at some point. He goes, yeah, you know, 90% of these surgeries, you're up and walking in 10 days, and then there's 10%. Yeah. And I went in for the first of my surgeries and came out in an anesthetic haze, and he handed me crutches, and he said, you're can't weight bear for 6 weeks. And I was like, wait, India, my plane ticket, you know. And
yeah.
It was such an interesting experience because I was in a fog, and I learned a lot about anesthesia from these experiences that did not add up well for me. So I didn't get to go to India. I healed that surgery with physical therapy, hurt my other knee, had a second surgery, healed that with physical therapy and yoga, back on the mat, hurt the first knee again, had a third surgery, right? The first surgery was really intense. It was the meniscus had torn completely off its mooring, so they sewed it back on. They took the entire thing and put it back on.
God.
Yeah, that was a kind of crazy thing.
Whoa.
The other two were just clean outs, but then it's sort of an apocryphal tale, but one of my teachers said to me, I'm back on the mat again, right? Three surgeries, a year and a half of physical therapy.
Yeah.
And I'm back on the mat, and the teacher said, what are you doing to prevent a fourth surgery? And that was all you needed to hear. As I tell this exact story many, many times, I picked my jaw up off the floor and I said nothing, you know, like that was my realization that I was doing absolutely nothing to change. I was healing and I was feeling pain free, but then I was putting myself back into that situation, and that led me to start teaching, to start studying anatomy, and it took me into a teaching desire to teach. I also was a carpenter at a different yoga center. I was a carpenter at Om Yoga Center with Cindy Lee.
Yeah.
And she kind of needed men to teach, so she pushed me into the teacher training, which I didn't have a ton of interest in. And I almost did the Jivamukti teacher training, and I didn't. And I did her teacher training, and I actually finished it and didn't ever finish my requirements.
Oh yeah.
Until she got on the phone with me and sort of yelled at me, and she was like,
I'll
give you classes, like just do it, you know. And so I did, and I owe my life to her in a lot of ways because I love what I do, you know. I love teaching, and I was born to teach. My sister's a teacher, my mother was a teacher, and so it's in my nature. So I started teaching, and what happened as soon as I started teaching was I got frustrated with first I got frustrated with a teacher training, that 200-hour teacher training, you only learn so much, and it's
weekend. You learn how much you don't know.
That's exactly it. I mean, it really is. And anatomy was a weekend, and I will admit to
That's
sleeping.
Typical.
Well, I slept through the weekend, and I got totally busted by the teacher because I went up to her and I said, wow, I'm really liking your the lectures you're doing. She goes, how are you learning by osmosis? And I was like, whoa, just busted. She was a sweetheart. And as soon as I got to start teaching, I didn't have anything to say to people who said, my wrist hurts, what do I do?
Right.
And I got really tired I got tired of saying modify. And I didn't even know what to tell them to modify, you know? So that led me to anatomy in a big way. That made me say, I had better learn like what the wrist is if I'm going to tell people what to do. And my classes were insane, right? Because I had a deep practice.
Yeah.
And I would just teach these incredibly aggressive, super fun, like loud rock and roll music and fun, hard, advanced practices that I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I would literally look in Light on Yoga and look for the hardest thing and go, let's do that today, you know? And it was really fun for me, but I realized that I wanted to help people a little more.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started learning about anatomy, and I actually started, I hooked up with Anusara Yoga.
Yeah.
And I started working with John Friend.
Yeah.
And again, it was like all of these people, right? You have
the manual.
First manual, which I still think is really brilliant.
It is brilliant.
The blue manual.
Yeah.
Like, I was very lucky to show up at Jiva Mukti before anyone was there, and I showed up in John Friend's World before, you know, before it really took off, and he was so good to me and my wife, like, my, she wasn't my wife yet. He was so good to us, you know, and it was really kind of incredible, and from him I learned just a ton, and a lot of the therapeutics that I learned still comes from him, and I feel like really what I teach is still from that first manual, you know, to this day.
So I'll mention John Friend in the show notes. I'll put some stuff about him and links to anything I can find at this point because he's kind of under the radar these days.
Yeah, he has a whole different practice.
But he was such a profound teacher for so many people during that time.
Yeah, he...
For so many people.
I will say on a lot of levels more than yoga for me. Like I met him through a friend of mine who was dying of cancer. And he just hooked me up. Like Cindy Lee turned me on to him at home. And I called him at like 10 o'clock one night. And he sat on the phone with me for an hour and just talked to me about this friend of mine who was dying and what he could do. And it was just really genuine and struck me really deeply. So I kind of got on that train for a good 2 years before I got off the train.
As these things go, I mean, you know, we won't even talk about that as far as John Friend goes. But he did help a lot of people. Cool. So you've had some amazing teachers and an interesting story. It kind of took you all over the place, it sounds like. Which is great for a yoga teacher because you need to have those experiences to actually be able to teach a variety of people.
There's no question. And, and I'll say one of the negatives of the John Friend experience was we had the resources at the time to travel and go follow him around. And you realize that yoga is a practice for wealthy white people.
It is.
And there weren't a ton of people of color in these workshops. And I was lucky enough to do it. But there were downsides to that, like emotionally when you look at what the practice is. And so a lot of these different things led me to start looking outside of the practice. But why I mentioned John Friend, actually, and I just spaced out a little bit, why I mentioned him at first is we were at a retreat and I was living in a house that had an empty first floor. And my landlord actually was like, "What are you doing with your life? Like, why don't you use my space?"
Your landlord.
Yeah, no joke. He was a good man. And I said to John, I said, "You know, I have this, I literally had been teaching like 3 months. I said, I have this space I can turn into a yoga center. Let's do it." And I said, "But I don't know what I'm doing." He goes, "Nah, do it." And so I had literally not taught a basics class. Ever, right?
Like, what was the name of the space?
The first one was Yoga Center of Brooklyn.
The Yoga Center of Brooklyn, right.
Yeah,
okay.
So
yeah.
I went ahead and I did it, and I opened a small little studio and started teaching basics classes.
Good for you.
It was good and bad. Like, it was the same thing where I have a certain amount of charisma, so we had a lot of fun, but I didn't know what I was doing. And, but I actually started to... We had a long hallway to get into the studio, and I was at one end of it. And I started to look at people and how they came into the studio, and I started to see that people, they have terrible movement patterns, that people walk really badly.
Yes.
And they would walk into the studio, and then for an hour and a half, they would do exactly what I tell them, right? They would, I was always, you know, I'm on about alignment, I'm like, do this with your foot, do this with your leg, and they would do it. And then they would go within seconds. Like, I would just sit there and watch. They would all go right back, even in putting away the blankets, you know, they'd go right back into their bad movement patterns.
It's ingrained.
Yeah, and that's when I started to look outside of the yoga practice, and I learned something that is part of the, probably the most important thing I teach in a lot of ways, which is I used to think that people came to yoga or exercise, whatever it is you're doing, to change, right? Especially yoga, you know, and I'm not a physical I'm not a personal trainer, and so I can't speak to that stuff. But I used to think, you know, yoga has some sort of cachet or some concept of spiritual or, you know, growth. And I used to think you come to yoga to change. And then I realized that, in fact, we all we want to do is reinforce our patterns and not change.
Yeah, and we resist it. It's resist change.
So profoundly, right? So, And I thought, you know, people came to yoga to change. Then I realized people, in fact, we exercise to reinforce what we have in our body. And that was just an unbelievable, like wake-up call for me. And that's what led me to say, okay, what do I want to do? I want to take yoga off the mat somehow. And that's when I started teaching people to walk.
That's
amazing. I started thinking
amazing.
About walking, and it all grew out of that basic idea of, and it was for me too, because I realized, like, it wasn't, you know, I was doing hardcore yoga. I was 6 days a week, 90 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. But I in the end, I realized that isn't what my injuries were about. My injuries were really about what I did the rest of the time.
Yeah.
And that's hard to put together in a way. You
it
know,
is.
Where it was like, oh, it's the rest of my life.
Yeah.
When I'm standing here really badly and I'm walking really badly. And,
yeah.
You know, my brother
is
5 years older than me and not a yogi. And, like, he still walks like I used to walk. And his sons walk like I used to walk. And it's a really ugly thing to see, you know.
I watch it so much more now.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really great.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the things I'm teaching people is just start watching.
Oh, yeah, you do.
You know, go sit in a park and look at the way people stand and the way they walk.
Yes.
It's pretty scary.
That's I will say the thing about yoga, saying that people come to yoga to change, and it's more about them resisting change. But I think most people who do stick with the practice are forced to change in some way or another. That's the thing that I've noticed. It might not be physically.
That's exactly right.
There is some change forced upon them.
Yeah.
There is a transformation happening, but you're more focusing in on the physical side of it. And I think that's why most people come to it, is to get exercise.
That's right.
But then they're reinforcing these bad patterns.
No, but that's a really great point, because I've worked with a lot of yoga teachers who I know have changed emotionally and spiritually.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to show up in my studio and stand and walk well, and they don't.
They don't.
Yeah.
Well,
so they just haven't
yes.
changed physically.
Yes, and I'm a perfect example of that. All right, so let's talk about core walking. I want you to tell my listeners, you kind of talked about how you were inspired to begin this work, but what exactly is core walking for pain relief?
So core walking is just that. I teach people how to walk. And, you know, I have all these catchphrases and phrases, but, you know, one of the ones I've been using lately is, I walk, therefore I walk correctly, is just not true.
Yeah.
Like, people think because you walk well. And we don't, you know. And so one of the things I'm always asking is, who taught you how to walk? And I watch people's reaction, and they have to think about it. And they were like, my parents. And I'm like, but you were a year old.
Yeah. Like, we taught ourselves.
That's it. Well, we imitate, you know. But no one really teaches you. There's no way to learn when you start walking somewhere between like 12 and 18 months, right?
No.
So we imitate people, but no one taught them how to walk.
Right.
And, you know, it's possible that you're imitating someone who is an elite athlete who has paid attention to posture their whole life. So you pick up good patterns, but it's much more likely that you're imitating someone who has had their share of accidents and injuries, their share of physical compensations and these weird things that have happened to their body, and that's what you pick up. And you're picking up a combination of two completely different bodies, and no one walks alike. So I think we actually imitate those we bond to more. Like, I meet people who walk exactly like their aunt. You know, more than their mother or father.
That's
because
amazing.
Oh, it's so wild.
That is wild. Whoa.
So no one taught you how to walk, but we automatically think we know how to walk.
Yeah.
Like, our brain is not designed to think we're wrong or bad. We have instincts to always think that we're normal.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, it's walking.
That's exactly right.
It's a no-brainer, right? We're just designed to do it, and we all do it correctly.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing as breathing, right?
Right.
Everyone thinks they know how to breathe.
Right.
And very few people know how to breathe, you know?
Yeah.
Then also, for me, there's an iconoclastic piece of the puzzle, which is, I am really comfortable with the other. Like, so for whatever reason, I found my way to something that nobody thinks makes any sense. Like, still, this is way more than a decade later. I tell people, I teach people how to walk, and they look at me cross-eyed, like, what are you talking about? And then I can say,
amazing.
You have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't know how to stand. You don't know how to walk. And and I'm doing it, they're just standing terribly, and sometimes I'll show them, and so there was that part of it. Like the challenge aspect was definitely interesting to me, even though I didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
And it's still a struggle, like, you know,
oh, yeah.
to convince people that it's a change they need to make.
Yeah.
And that they're, so the idea is that on a certain level, some people can get away with having really poor posture and really poor movement patterns in the same way that some people can drink scotch and smoke 2 packs of cigarettes and live till 95.
Yeah.
So some people can do that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's true.
And some people can live and not have any muscle.
Yeah.
Right? Some people can live with no core tone and
that's
no core muscle and live to 95.
She has no pain in her body and she's 75 years old.
That's and hasn't done a ton of working out.
Never done exercise in her life.
So my father...
Other than just moving around.
...had a lot of pain. My father was a mess, right? Uh-huh. But he smoked... I say the only exercise he ever got was putting a cigarette to his lips, which he did really well for a long time, you know? But he had a stroke at like 50, and he actually stopped smoking. But he never exercised a day in his life, right? So for me, exercise is a struggle. Like, there's nothing in me that makes me want to go work out. I'm my father's son, you know?
Yeah, okay.
But he then had a fall.
Ugh.
And it was, and I put a lot of this stuff together later, you know, but it was all downhill from there.
Yeah.
So he got away with it up until about 68 years with no exercise, no muscle, but loose like me.
Right.
And he had one fall and he hurt his ankle and it all just went south. Like he started falling more.
Yeah.
And it's in that way that some people can get away with it and others can't. And I'm not, nothing about your mother, but what would happen?
She's never hurt herself.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So she's not prepared for what happens after that first fall.
Yeah, I agree.
And she might heal really well.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Right? But so core walking is about learning to walk, but it's also about learning what muscles you need.
Right.
Core muscles, right? Core tone. And and everyone thinks, you know, when people think of the core, they just think abs. And my core is a little bit bigger. You know, my core goes from above the knee to below to the rib cage.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So the abs, the pelvic floor, you know, the muscles of the pelvis and the inner thighs. Those, that's like my, I call it the holy trinity of muscle groups, right? Inner thighs, pelvic floor, and abdominals. And we need balanced tone in those muscles.
Yeah.
And so then there's a whole nother subset of people who, there's the people who've never exercised a day in their life, but then there are the people who have exercised a lot, but they've focused on sit-ups and push-ups. So they have, like, you know, one of their four abdominals really well toned and nothing else,
right,
you know?
Right.
And then, so that gets into balance.
That's another imbalance.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So that, so what the core of core walking is about muscle tone and balanced muscle tone.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we do that? You know, and the truth of the matter is my customers and clients are not yogis.
Yeah.
They are very specifically women from 45 to 65. And I would say all the men who do core walking are doing it because their wives said go.
Go, yeah.
You know, I bought this thing.
Client, wives who are clients.
That's
yeah.
exactly it.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Why don't you tell my listeners what a core walking session would look like.
So sorry.
That's okay.
So they all start the same. You know, it's funny. In the beginning, I started off, I'm really into all different kinds of body work. You know, what I do complements body work. But at the time I was... starting my walking program, I was getting Rolfed, and I was obsessed with Ida Rolf. I named my first daughter Ida, my only daughter. I only have one, I have two kids. But I named my daughter Ida for Ida Rolf. Like, and I was just, and I didn't study Rolfing. I just read everything she wrote, and I got Rolfed, and I thought it was just a brilliant, brilliant practice. So
I
said, I'm going to bait, you know, so they have their core 10. I said the walking program is going to be an 8. Session program, and that was my initial start, was that everyone needed to do 8 sessions. And then I did things like, you have to do 8 sessions and not carry bags and not wear headphones, you know, not be on your phone. And people are like, you're out of your mind, you know. So I started very quickly to change, and now it's fine, whatever you want, you know. But I used to think it would take people 8 sessions to change, and I've had people... Like, a lot of this stuff is really humbling and odd, because I'm sensitive to success, and what I'm doing is really weird, but I've had people come in, and they come in for one session, and at the end, I'm like, so, you know, you should probably do 4 or 5 sessions with me, and the guy would be like, no, I'm good. And this one I'm always thinking of in particular, no, I'm good. And I was like, really? Well, most people come back. He goes, no, I'm good. And I was like, oh, he hates me. He hated me. He thought this stuff was really stupid. Like, okay. And then I ran into this particular guy, and it's happened many times, like 6 months later at a party, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh, wow, you completely changed my life.
It all and took I said, one session.
Yeah, I said, oh, really? I thought you hated me. And he was like, no, like, I loved it. That was amazing. And I said, really? He goes, yeah, I kind of got it, and I did what you told me. And he goes, I'm out of pain, and I'm working. Wow. Like, and he was a carpenter, and I was able to talk his language, you know? And but trust me, still, when somebody comes once and doesn't come back, I'm still like, oh, they hated me. Like, it's just, you know, that's just part of the insecurity of life, you know? So I really learned to distill it quickly. Mm-hmm. And so the first session always starts with standing, like stand in front of me and tell me where you are in space.
Yeah.
Right. That's the idea of change is where you are in space. So if you're a yogi, right, I'm going to say, show me Tadasana.
Yeah.
Right. And I think everyone's Tadasana is pretty darned awful.
Yeah. Mine was pretty awful.
And, you know, that's an interesting thing. But before we talked about it, did you think it was pretty awful?
No, I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. So it's such a trip, you know? And so I start with that.
Yeah.
And I say, where are your shoulders in relation to your pelvis? And everyone usually says forward. And I say, really? Well, they're behind.
Mm-hmm.
And now what's interesting is, I don't usually work with mirrors, but like, let's say I'm doing a workshop. Like I do walking workshops and these SOAS workshops.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a whole bunch of people sitting there, and I bring somebody up, and I say, where are your shoulders? And they go, I'm forward. And I say, really? They're behind. And they say, no way. And I say, well, everybody, tell them where they are. And they go, behind.
Yeah.
So they get this kind of
reinforcement.
Automatic feedback.
Yeah.
The fifth person who I bring up at that workshop is still saying forward.
Wow.
And I'm like, didn't you just see the other four people? Yeah. They all said the same thing. Like, it's so hard to perceive ourselves in space.
Is.
So that's where every lesson begins with, right?
Yeah.
So it really starts with the shoulders, but then it's all about the pelvis. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm obsessed with the psoas muscle.
Yeah.
And like, that's one of my workshops is psoas release party.
Yeah.
I'm going to do one in New York this weekend.
Nice.
And the psoas is this deep core muscle that attaches the legs to the spine.
Yeah.
Only three muscles attach the legs to the spine. The psoas is the muscle of trauma.
Yeah.
It's just a powerful muscle. Oh, hello, Super Kitty.
Hi, Kitty.
So I get right to the pelvis.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think most people are sort of tucking their pelvis under and sinking their thigh bones forward.
Yeah.
And it's another thing we do not perceive.
Yeah.
Right? We think we're good.
Mm-hmm.
And most people's pelvises are misaligned, and the thigh bones are misaligned, and the psoas, as a result, is misaligned.
Yeah.
So I always begin every session with get your legs under your hips, get your pelvis aligned, and it feels really weird to people.
It does.
And I say, if it doesn't feel weird, we're not going to, this is not going to go well.
Yeah.
Because I'm asking you to change however old somebody is. I work with kids, but not, you know, more teenagers than really young kids, you know. But if you're a teenager, it's much easier in a way to change
it
than
is.
If you're 60, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're 60 and you've been doing these patterns for your whole life.
Yeah.
And you've been doing these patterns your whole life, and I say change, it's going to feel weird. So if you say it doesn't feel weird, I know you're trying to please me, which is a whole nother dynamic of the client relationship.
Right, being honest.
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah.
So we start with standing, we get to the position of the pelvis, feeling the way the feet fall into the earth, and then we just go to walking.
Yeah.
And my thing is, like, I am a teacher. There's no question that I'm a teacher, but I'm really a guide.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of my big things is I do not fix people.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is people are looking to be fixed.
Yeah.
Like, people want the magic blue pill.
I know, they don't want to do it themselves.
They do not, and I do not believe you're going
to
age gracefully. Another one of my main themes. You're just not going to age gracefully if you are not the master of your destiny, you know? So I am, even though I'm going to teach you, this is your psoas, this is what you have to do, this is what's important, I'm going to guide you to change yourself.
Okay.
And or else it's just not going to last, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, so people just start walking, and I say, what do you feel?
Yeah.
You know, what do your feet do?
Yeah.
What are what are your knees doing? You know, are you leaning backwards? Because everyone leans backwards.
Yeah.
No one thinks they lean
backwards.
Everybody
does.
Yeah.
That's very common, yeah.
It's incredible. You know, one of the things, if you buy my core walking program online, So, you know, I was teaching in New York, and then I realized, man, there's a Rolfer, a chiropractor, a Feldenkrais teacher on every block in New York, right?
There not here.
Five yoga teachers on every block. But even forgetting Cleveland, which is true, it's not here. But I was even thinking, like, the middle of Australia. Like, what are those people going to do, you know? And so I made videos, and I wrote a bunch of books. And I sell my products online, and one of the things people get is you send me a video of your walk, and I mark it up. You know, I put it make like squiggles and lines, like instant replay on TV, and I give you a voiceover. And I have hundreds of these videos, and if I was to show you them, they're all the same.
Oh my
God! Right, I've talked to people, and I go, "Wow, doesn't that take so much time?" I'm like, "It doesn't take any time. I say the same thing to everyone. Stop leaning backwards."
Wow!
And I show them. They send me their video, you know, and I pause it and I say, I draw a line. And that line is a backwards angle.
Yeah.
And I let them walk a few feet. And I'm like, that line's a backwards angle. And everyone does very similar patterns with the way they walk, where we use our feet too much.
Yeah.
There are different themes and variations. Like some way too many people move from the knee down, right? That all their movement, it's not coming from the core and the psoas and the center. It's really coming from not even the leg as much as like the below the leg, you know, the shin.
Yeah.
So that the video is a really great way of pointing that out. But that's the first session. It's just like you try to tell me. Because then on the video even I say, I'm telling you all these things, but really watch this 10 times.
Yes.
Right? Watch it 10 times to see yourself so you can start to get a new awareness of who you are and where you are.
Yeah.
And you still won't want to change.
Well, let's talk about my session.
Okay, great. which we haven't talked about since, so I'm really excited to hear.
We haven't, and it's been really interesting, and I still have a lot of work to do, and it's been 2 months. Right. So the things that you pointed out for me was that I need to draw my hips back, and that my pelvis was not in neutral.
Right.
And in order to draw them back, to get the femur resting into the sockets, to get the weight even on my feet, that was my thing. I kept drawing to that one.
Great.
The other one was the loop, the kidney loop, drawing the ribs back and finding the plumb line. So like for me as a yoga teacher, I felt, like I'm standing this really tall. I have this great posture. I lift my chest, you know, and really what you pointed out is I'm in this walking around in this perpetual back bend.
Totally.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And then the other thing going on with
a
my
bad back,
a bad back bend,
yeah.
which in turn was causing me some low back tenderness. The other thing, since I worked with Jenny Otto, she tried to teach us the whole teacher training, finding a neutral pelvis. I mean, we worked on that every time I worked with her, finding a neutral pelvis. So I thought I had that one nailed down. Okay. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Which was also causing the low back pain also. So here I am, I'm standing, my pelvis is not neutral. It's more like in this posterior tilt, pushed forward. And I'm kind of in this upper back bend going on. And then I don't even know what's going on in my legs, you know? So you pointed all those things out to me.
Right.
And when you pushed, not pushed me, but gently guided me into proper alignment... Right. I felt like I was hunched over and leaning forward like I was the Hunchback of Notre Dame or something.
Yeah. I hear ape all the time.
Ape, yeah.
I feel like an ape.
An ape.
Yeah.
And so now when I'm walking, I visualize what that would look like, and that helps me align myself.
That's the best.
Yeah.
I had a follow-up with a client recently, and I hadn't seen her in a year.
Yeah.
And she came in, and it was online, you know, and she said, I said, how's it going? She goes, it's great. I feel really great. No back pain. I said, oh, great. Does it all feel natural and normal? She goes, no. And I said, really?
After
a year later. She goes, yeah, I only know what's right if it feels wrong. And I thought that was a great
I can thing. Attest to that.
Yeah.
Because I still feel that same thing. So my walking misalignments were, basically, I took all those things into standing, from standing into walking. And you pointed out that I'm striking hard on my heel, which I do have plantar fasciitis in my left foot. I already had it in my right foot.
Right.
And there was I was kind of stiff too in the way my whole body just was kind of stiff. So I was taking these big long strides.
Right.
So what you had suggested to me, and I'll tell you what I felt after doing this, was that I take shorter strides. I first find the alignment in my stance and then start the walk, take the shorter strides, and then I think that was about it. I mean, it really wasn't much. Hips back, ribs back.
Yeah, no, and so my wrap is almost always the same. Is what happens when you take the shortest strides? You use your whole foot.
You use your whole foot.
And your pelvis starts to rotate.
Yeah. Right. So I sent you this email. I want to read this to you.
Oh, great.
Okay. So I wanted to share some initial thoughts and observances. After several walks to try and integrate some of the changes, I found a few of your cues very helpful. What has helped the most is taking shorter strides and feeling my pelvis move in more of a figure eight position and rotation, which we talked about. It feels easier to integrate the alignment when moving faster with shorter strides. Sometimes I'll stop in the middle of the walk and do some hip rotations and then carefully align the pelvis back so that I can feel the femur move into the socket. And then when I get into a good rhythm, I felt my entire body moving like a spring all the way up to my head and neck. I'm still struggling with the kidney loop, which is, you know, this was about 3 or 4 weeks after. And that's still true today. I'm still struggling with the ribs moving back. But I found that if I align there first, I can integrate better downward. I'm also focusing on how I stand and move around in general.
Right.
So, like, I found that as a yoga teacher, I always align from the ground up.
Right. And that's interesting.
Yeah, but then but that wasn't helping this this rib situation.
Right.
And so I had to start aligning from the top down. So that's something I've been working on.
Yeah.
So what are all those things I'm...
Well, what's so interesting is that everyone has a different path to it, you know? So I'm so used to working with someone in the third session, the fourth session, when they start walking, they have to like stop and put it all together.
Yes.
They literally have to like rebuild themselves to then move.
Yes.
And some people do it purely from the feet, and some do it from the knees because of hyperextension, and some do it from the back of the rib cage, you know, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about the kidney loop, which is an Anusara term that I think I told you that one of my students once said to me, you know, she studied Anusara, because I think Anusara is really brilliant, but it's all this muscle stuff, and then you throw an organ in there. Like, what is the point of an organ in the middle of all that? Which I love.
Yes, that's true.
And this particular woman taught me so much. She was a student of mine and didn't realize that when like she'd be in down dog and I'd be talking anatomy, she would unconsciously shake her head yes if I was right and no if I was wrong. And she knew way more than me, you know.
Whoa.
She didn't have the same personality like for teaching, so she wasn't a teacher.
Yeah.
She was a studier.
Yeah.
But she taught me so much. But so she said that about kidney loop. One of the things that people don't realize about this, the shift in the rib cage, is habitual muscle tightness.
Right.
Right. So like a lot of my workshops I do, they're not comedy routines, but I feel like we had a lot of fun in our session. You know, the more fun I have with people, the more easily you're going to change and embrace it.
Yeah. So not take yourself so seriously.
Totally. And I look for that in my workshops. And I know like, I subbed a class the other day. I haven't been teaching much since I got here.
Yeah.
I subbed a class the other day, and I know if I can make people laugh in the first couple of minutes, we're all going to have, I'm going to relax. They're going to have more fun.
Yeah.
So like at my workshops, I'm always looking for like the right older person, often a man, but not always, who I know is so tight that when I stand him up in my good way, he's back in his bad way in an instant. In other words, because I'm so loose, if I was at a workshop and someone put me into good posture, I'd stay in that decent posture because my muscles don't fight me on it.
Yeah.
But if you're really tight, especially in the back body where everyone is tight, in the lumbar and in the spinal muscles, I can put you in a good position.
Yeah.
But literally, it might be 30 seconds before you're pulled out of it.
Yeah.
So I'll get somebody up there and I'll literally just like leave him there. And I'm nice about it, you know, and I can tell the right guy and I'll stand him upright. I'll walk away and I'll literally walk back in 30 seconds and have to do it again and have to do it again. And just over the course of time. So that is one of the things that makes certain of these changes hard. Like, yeah. Everyone can stop hyperextends their knees, because not everyone can, yeah. Right? But everyone who can hyperextend their knees can stop.
Yeah, I do, yeah. And this, your cues have helped me get better. I'm getting better, and yeah, I'm way more aware of it.
So my thing is that I was born hyperextending. Like, yeah. They used to say I came out in, yeah, Hanumanasana. Like, I was born in splits and too loose.
Yeah.
So I hyperextended 90% of the time.
Yeah.
And now I do it 10%.
Yeah.
I've switched. Yes. You know what I mean? I, yeah, can still do it. My kids bust me. My, yeah, daughter, we'll walk in the street. She's like, you're walking terribly.
Yeah.
And I'll fix it. She goes, you just try to fix it, but you can't fool me. You know, yeah, like, so I still hyperextend. But,
yeah,
that, anyone, someone who hyperextends can just stop hyperextending.
Yeah.
But when your muscles are tight in your back, mm-hmm, you can't do kidney loop just because you want to.
Exactly.
Right? You can't broaden, I use broaden the middle back more than anything. Right?
Yeah, broaden the, exactly.
And you can, and to me, you can't breathe if you can't broaden the middle back. You don't get access to a full body breath. True. Right? So that's where this stuff could start getting a little more complicated.
Right.
In that anyone can stop hyperextending if they want.
Right.
Right? Because the joints are going to allow for it, but the, right, muscle change is really different.
So let's talk about then real quick some tips you gave me and some exercises you gave me because of what was happening in my, right, body. So you're saying,
you have to remind me,
muscle tightness. So I definitely have muscle tightness in my back body because I'm like all about the back bend. Oh, right. I'm going to open, you know, that's a yoga teacher thing. We all totally just want to open. So
they feel great.
It feels good. Yeah. It's energizing. But I'm chronically in a back bend, so it doesn't, right, feel good anymore.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
A good back bend to me is nature's antidepressant.
Yes.
Like the right, yes, spinal extension as opposed to, yes, spinal bending,
right,
is one of the great things we have available to us.
Yeah.
But you're right that most people are not doing it,
no,
correctly.
Yeah. Right. But so what I've been drawn to in my personal practice, and this is stuff that you kind of told me to do, is forward bends because they feel, right, so good because I need to stretch out the tightness in my back body.
Correct.
So in addition to the forward bending that I'm so drawn to because I need that, you were telling me that I need to strengthen these deep core muscles down the center line,
right,
of my body. And then also the inner thigh. So you gave me these bridge exercises with the block in between the,
right,
thigh. Which immediately when I do bridge with the block between the thigh and really engage, my femur bones just slide right into the,
perfect,
socket.
Yeah.
And my pelvis moves into a neutral position.
Right.
It's like immediate.
It's great.
As soon as I engage.
Right.
And
you relax your butt.
And then I relax my butt. And it softens my knees.
The whole thing.
Yeah. And then just strengthening then the center deep core. What are those deep core muscles in the center? The transverse? The
transverse wraps from back to front.
Okay.
Which is super deep. And then, yeah, the rectus goes
the
up
rectus
and down.
The rectus abdominis, yeah. So.
But I basically teach transverse, mm-hmm, and that the rectus is dominates everything. And,
yeah,
like if you've done any core, you most likely have done sit-ups and rectus.
Yeah. Work. Which is what I've been doing since you told me. And it is definitely helping with broadening the back of
the
ribs.
That's great. That's great.
But it's a process for me because I didn't realize how ingrained this pattern is.
Right.
It's really ingrained.
How long have you been practicing?
Yoga? Since 1995.
Yeah.
Same
so,
time as,
there
you,
as go.
You.
Right.
But it's all shifted. And I'm also hyper mobile, but I also have, I am less flexible now because I've worked on strengthening the joints.
That's great.
So I don't care about how flexible I am. I really don't. I want to be strong.
Hypermobile is really troubling in the sense that people don't realize you can be like me.
Yeah.
Hypermobile in the joints,
yeah,
and ridiculously loose in your muscles.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you could also be hypermobile in the joints and ridiculously tight in your muscles.
Yeah.
And that confuses a lot of people.
It is confusing.
Right?
Yeah.
So you get people who are super, they're in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And they think they're really tight. Because their,
yeah,
hamstrings are really tight, but,
yeah,
their joints are not.
Right.
That their muscles have tightened up in response to the looseness of their joints
path,
or,
yes,
the looseness of their ligaments, you,
yeah,
know. So that gets
the
into
compensation patterns.
Yeah, yeah.
So to speak.
And that's what I love about what I do is everybody is different.
Yeah.
Like on a certain level, I'm doing the
same
thing. Stand up, walk this way.
But everyone's going to react differently.
And I know that And whoever I meet next
yeah.
is a brand new experience for me.
Yeah.
Which just really makes what I do super fun.
So the other thing that struck up for me is the concepts of awareness of my body in space, which, again, I did this incredible teacher training with Jenny Otto, who taught that constantly.
Right.
And I was aware of it at that time. And since then, which we ended in 2013, I have not, it's kind of dropped on the wayside. So it's brought back this awareness of my body in space. Not just now in the walking, but also as I'm just moving about my day, and then also in my yoga practice.
Right.
So the things I've noticed differently in my yoga practice as these with these cues that you've given me is that I have found way more comfort in my standing postures. Like
right.
I've been able to work that neutral pelvis. In the standing postures. And I've also learned how, which again, it's like, I've been doing this for so long. Right. How did I not know this before? I did, but I didn't. I think yeah. your cues have brought this awareness. And then also finding where I need to engage more to find the comfort and finding where I need to release more to find the comfort. So both
right.
have worked. So that's my
so great.
My down dog, that's where I've noticed the most change.
Oh, that's really great.
And it's with this, again, it's with the kidney loop.
That's right.
Because once I release that, then my hamstrings feel a little more open. And then I'm able to just engage a little better in my legs and feet there. And
that's
lengthen
phenomenal.
A little more in
yeah.
the upper. It, like my down dog feels completely different. That's one area. That's, so that down dog, the standing postures, and then just this whole idea of being able to know where to engage more for comfort and where to release more for comfort.
It's really great. I really love the idea that you have an understanding that, like, the opening your middle back, broadening the middle back,
yeah.
is actually connected in releasing
the hamstrings.
That's just great
yeah.
stuff. Yeah.
So can you just touch upon these concepts? Because I think this is kind of where this stems from, is the concepts of proprioception.
Proprioception.
And then interoception, but yeah. you call it kinesthetic awareness.
Yeah, there are just different ways of seeing ourselves in
yeah.
space, right? So proprioception is like the body's inner mechanism for where we are in space.
Mm-hmm.
And then kinesthetic awareness is the outer mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And we can change.
Yeah.
And it's just the same thing. And we really don't
mm-hmm.
think to change or want to change. So like, and we're creatures of habit.
Yeah.
Right? So we're connected to our habit. You know, like
yeah.
I cook. And I don't really need to, when I'm cooking dinner, I don't need to look at the knife when I'm chopping.
Right.
Doesn't mean I don't,
yeah.
right? But I don't need to,
yeah.
you know? I have my technique and I can chop an onion.
Mm-hmm.
My kids who are trying to learn how to cook, they cannot do that,
no.
right? They have to look at the onion and there's going to be a certain point where they've done it enough times
mm-hmm.
and they can stop looking at the onion because they make this physical connection between their body and their brain, you know?
Yeah.
Another story I tell is about biking in Manhattan and how biking Manhattan in and of itself is fairly terrifying.
Yeah.
And I used to do it before the bike lanes, you know?
Right, right.
But like I'd be biking down the street
Ugh.
And there'd be two trucks
Ugh.
And a small space between them. And I'm like, well, I can't make it. I
yeah.
can't get through there. And then a bike messenger flies through. And I say,
You're like, wait a minute.
And I say, oh, I can make it through, and I still don't.
Right.
Because I'm still terrified, you know what I mean? Like,
terrified.
I don't trust
yes.
in that. And that, to me, is a very simple...
Yeah, that is.
His kinesthetic awareness, that bike messenger, or hers, is just so much more refined than
yeah.
mine, wherein, in terms of cooking and chopping the onion, mine
yeah.
is so much more refined than my kids.
Interesting,
so, but,
yeah.
So where do you start?
Yeah.
So in a way, again, I'm a guide, right?
Yeah.
Because you've been doing what you do a long time.
Yeah.
And we met... Do you run the Kula? So we met
yeah.
via Facebook group and
yeah.
then in a yoga class, you know, when it like literally like the first week I moved here.
Yeah.
And I love Jenny Otto. Like
yeah.
I told you that immediately. Like I have so much respect for Jenny Otto. I'm
yeah.
still teaching poses I learned from Jenny
yeah.
Otto.
Yeah.
She told you nothing different than me.
No,
right?
Exactly.
I know Jenny, we teach very similar stuff. We're
yeah,
on the same path
exactly.
and same wave. So why was it that you needed some other thing to change the same exact pattern?
Yeah.
Right? To something else to help you change your
yeah.
kinesthetic awareness.
I think, yeah. And I just think, honestly, like at that time, I really wasn't fully grasping the I guess the all that I was learning. It was all, right. there was so much being thrown at me in this teacher training. There
totally,
was,
yeah. You know,
even though there was a lot of repetitive things, like we always walked after our weekend with Jenny. We always, oh and God, she would so watch great. Us walk. And she would
I
say, Jen B, Zen Jen, shake your hips more. You know,
oh God,
like stick
it.
Your butt yeah. back. Like she would yeah. say these things, you know, she'd call me out on certain things. And so there's yeah. a similar teaching between yeah. you and her, but it, and it did stick then a little bit, but I again, it was just so much. But you're just like reinforcing, and you've brought it all back to me,
right.
I think.
And you know, it's interesting, like, mm-hmm. I'm very human.
Yeah.
And I'm really good at teaching people to walk.
Yeah.
But I am stuck in my own patterns when it comes to parenting.
Right.
Right. I have two kids
right,
who
right.
I get frustrated with, and I yell at, and I snap
right.
at, and every time I do it, I'm like, you know, I really shouldn't do that.
Right.
My wife says, you know, it's really counterproductive. It's not going to get what you want in the end. And tomorrow I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where I have changed myself completely physically.
Yeah.
Like I've met people that I haven't seen. One of the, there were all these moments where I knew I was onto something, but I was online. I used to be a member of the Park Slope Food Co-op, which mm-hmm. is the only thing I miss about New York and Brooklyn, which I miss so terribly. And I remember being online at the co-op and someone came up to me and said, I did not recognize you.
Wow.
Like I've been standing, you know, they were working at
yeah.
a cashier, that I've been standing there watching you online and I did not recognize you because your posture is so, and I used to have really bad posture.
Wow.
I just leaned backwards and turned my feet out. It was just, it was an ugly,
yeah.
you know, it's just,
yeah.
it was not fun to look at. And
yeah.
she was like, wow, you have completely... And that was one of the first times like, I was like, wow, I...
Wow.
Yeah, I'm onto something. And that
yeah.
I know, like, when I'm working with a client or at a workshop, I can show my posture and say, I am a really good advertisement for what I'm selling.
Yeah.
Right? But, no joke, I have not applied myself to parenting in
yeah.
the exact same way, you know? So
absolutely.
It's just the nature of being human.
Yeah.
But I think it serves us really well
mm-hmm.
to change the kinesthetic awareness, our sense of awareness of ourselves.
Yeah.
Because all I care about is aging gracefully, right?
Yeah.
That's like
right.
the theme of what I do.
That's exactly
yeah.
what Jenny would say, too.
Yeah. That we're not going to
yeah.
make it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 54.
Yeah.
My kids are still young. They're 9 and 12. I want to be at... My parents aged
yeah.
terribly. So like I said,
yeah.
my father first fell at 68. And then he lived till he was 86.
Yeah.
But he did not have a quality of life, you
yeah.
know. And he ended
yeah,
up being
God,
incontinent.
No.
And my mother is 86. She's still alive. And she's in bed. She's bedridden for
Ugh.
5 years. And
Ugh.
Now... That was the result of some surgery that
yeah.
did not go so well,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then actually I think another surgery messed with her brain a little bit,
yeah,
which has changed my attitude about surgeries and anesthesia like profoundly over
yeah.
the years.
Yes.
But.
yeah, that should almost be like a last resort.
That
yeah.
completely.
Yeah.
So I know that where I'm coming from is not good, right?
Yeah.
Like if I just did what my parents did. And I see it in my brother and sister, which is worrying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know where I would end up if I didn't. So I feel like I had this intense incentive to make these changes.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out where you get that incentive from.
Right.
Know?
Well, I mean, you're touching on a point that's a lot of people are sensitive to is aging gracefully. Aging
yeah.
in general is a sensitive topic for a lot of people. Nobody wants to age.
Right.
We all want to look young and beautiful forever. We want to feel young and beautiful forever. So
I had a friend over,
a friend of mine came
from New York, who's childhood friend, and he's 2 years older than me. And so our joke is always that he's older than me. He was literally saying to my kids, so
yeah.
who looks old?
Physically,
who looks
yeah.
older?
Yeah.
Who looks older?
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't like,
yeah.
we're terrified of change and aging and stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's
an epidemic
in our culture for sure.
But the idea of learning to age gracefully is something you have to cultivate,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether
yeah.
it be, and, diet, I'm doing this wacky, I've been doing this cleanse, it's like for a year already, and I just did this strange, like the last week I did a salt flush.
What?
Which is, it's so crazy. I drank a quart of salt water. Pretty much, I woke up and drank a quart of salt water, and then drank a quart of regular water right after that to
yeah.
flush your system. And,
yeah.
I like junk food, I like ice creams, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm here in Cleveland where Mitchell's ice cream is the best ice cream in the world, you know, But I also realize that, and my parents, I have come from an overweight family. Like, yeah. I'm not skinny, but I'm far and away the skinniest person in my family.
Yeah.
Though my sister is losing a lot of weight. That the aging gracefully piece, it covers all of these different things, you know. So I had to take a real solid look at the walking, the exercise. And it's like, to be honest, I don't do a ton of yoga like I used to, right? Yeah. I hike.
Yeah.
Another amazing thing about Cleveland. Like, 15 minutes out my door, and I can go to an unbelievable hike in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
I took this friend of mine, came in from New York, and I picked him up and we went for a hike, and I've been hiking. I think it's called Doan Creek or Lower Shaker Lakes.
Doan Brook. Yeah.
So I took him for a hike there.
Oh, yeah, I hike there all the time.
It's like one might be my favorite one, and I go with my crazy. I have a crazy dog, which is amazing there. Mm-hmm.
That's right by my house, and you're surrounded by the city on both sides of this creek.
But you don't even see it.
You don't even know it or see it. Yeah.
So I have done that.
Yeah.
20 times in the last 2 months.
Nice.
Right? And I had taken I took my friend. He was terrified. So it had rained like 2 or 3 days before. But it's not a dangerous hike.
No, it's not at all.
You know? But it's got ups and downs and it's skinny path, you know? Yeah. And he was like, I can't fall. I can't afford to fall. And one of the things I realized was it was kinesthetic awareness.
Exactly.
I have done this hike now 20 or way more. Like, I would do it like 2 or 3 days a week. This is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I can fly through that path now.
Yeah.
I can just fly through that path. And he was terrible. And he's a guy who walks 2 or 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
He takes he counts steps. Takes over 20,000 steps a day.
Wow.
Right? But he was terrified.
Yeah.
And we were late. I was like, I texted my wife in the middle. She's like, where are you? I'm like, we're here. But he is so slow. Like, he's good. He was literally. So, and then I texted, I Instagrammed my hikes a bunch, you know.
Yeah.
And I Instagrammed.
Yeah.
Wet and slippery hike or something, but lots of slipping and sliding. And so today I took my own advice and took short steps.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So even I, in my walking, cannot pay attention, but when it push comes to shove, and I could have fallen many times, and it has its steep moments where you can really go down.
Yeah, yeah.
I was taking these tiny little steps to reinforce exactly my own advice.
So, but just for the purposes of time, I want to get to the meat of why do you think that changing our gait and this, you know, having this this understanding of awareness, this kinesthetic awareness, how does that help with pain relief? So people are going to be like, what is this?
Yeah. That's a great question.
Yeah.
So most often people don't realize why they're in pain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can be in pain from an injury. You can get into a car accident, and you can have, that's a pretty clear indication of, I have an injury, right?
Trauma, yeah.
But then, and that's a certain kind of trauma, right? But you can be in pain from emotional trauma.
Exactly.
And that gets into the psoas muscle, right? Because that's, there's different kinds of pain and trauma, right? So there's like, get into a car accident and you mess up your hip, you break a bone, you know.
Yeah.
Even if it's just soft tissue, and that's something you have to heal from. But then, in terms of like emotional trauma, the way the body works, you know, the way the nervous system works in terms of, not to get too complicated, but there's the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system, fight or flight and relaxation, right? That the body, we're supposed to do both all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like you burn yourself, like you react, you know, and we're supposed to always find this state of balance. But if for whatever reason, whether it's emotionally from a parent that's not treating you well, or you're in a war zone, or you are bombarded constantly with shocks to the sympathetic nervous system, you stay there.
Yeah.
You get stuck there, and then you can't kind of get out of that back into the parasympathetic nervous system, right?
I think our culture is perpetually stuck in the sympathetic nervous system.
We are all traumatized.
Yes, exactly.
But that's a beautiful thing in a very weird way, right? We are traumatized and we are here to develop a support system.
Yeah.
To figure out how to work through that trauma.
Yeah.
And so many people don't do that.
No.
Right?
No.
So there are all these kinds of pains. So you have a literal pain from an injury.
Mm-hmm.
You have emotional pain and so I'm going to even include a war, you know, like the sympathetic nervous system pain. Mm-hmm. And then you have poor posture pain.
Yeah.
Right? If you stand habitually with bad posture, you're going to have imbalanced muscle groups.
Yes.
So the whole idea is, well, one of the ways I put it is, your bones hold you up, your muscles move you, and your nerves tell the muscles to move the bones. That's as simple as I can make it, mm-hmm. right? And that we are creatures of our nervous system.
Yeah.
That is it, right? Yeah. Our nervous system runs the show, and that's just how it works. And yeah. it's all about communication between the brain and the body.
Yeah.
So not all pain is nerve pain, but all pain is nerve pain, because right. that's just how it works, right. you know? So that in terms of walking and exercise and muscle balance, all I'm really doing mm-hmm. is trying to create the best possible pathway for the nerves to flow through the body.
Mm.
So that when the nerves are given the best shot, mm-hmm. you have to give them the best shot. So
yeah.
if you're in Tadasana, or if you're in just standing, or if you walk and you're leaning backwards and you're compressing, if you lean backwards to stand, you are habitually compressing your lumbar spine.
Absolutely.
And that, I'm not kidding, is 95% of the population, and the other 5% are broken in the other way.
Yeah.
They're leaning forward for different reasons. Very often spinal trouble,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
So if you are compressing the bones of the lumbar spine,
mm-hmm.
one, your muscles are going to tighten up around that compression.
Yeah.
Right? And your nerves can't flow.
No.
Your nerves,
there's a large bundle of nerves in that area too.
So there are nerves coming all up and down out of the spinal cord, all up and down.
Yeah.
They're coming and they're going to the peripheral body,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But then at the base of the thoracic spine mm-hmm. is the cauda equina, which mm-hmm. is the end of the spinal cord,
mm-hmm.
where all the nerves just come out.
Right.
And all of those nerves are making their way, not all through the lumbar, but a lot of them are just right in that area. If you're compressing the bones of the lumbar spine, you're compressing your muscles, you're affecting the nerves' ability to flow. And some people's pain is from that.
Yeah.
Right? But I don't think you can get out of chronic pain without addressing that.
Yeah.
That's like my thing, is you just want to create the environment for the nerves to flow successfully. And when you create that environment, the odds of healing are so much greater.
Yeah.
But most people don't exercise
yeah.
in a way to help that. They don't do their yoga. I don't think anyone, I shouldn't say anyone, I don't think most people are doing yoga correctly.
Right.
You know, so when I'm teaching you bridge, I teach,
yeah.
so I'm teaching online in my house, right?
Yeah.
And I teach the same things over and over again. So I
yeah.
used to think, why do these people keep coming back? Because I'm teaching the same class essentially. And they're like, yeah, we like that, you
right.
know?
That's how you relearn a pattern,
there's
right?
No question. Like
mm-hmm.
I realized after a while when people would say to, right away when I started teaching, teachers came to my classes, which
mm-hmm.
was a really nice thing. And again, I
yeah.
was super insecure.
Yeah.
And I was like, why are they coming here? You know?
Yeah.
And then there was this one woman, she was an Alexander teacher and she was an amazing practitioner. And one day, I forget if it was about gluteus maximus or the pelvic floor, which I talk about all the time,
mm-hmm.
she said, oh, I get that. And I realized, you've been hearing me say that for 4 months, right? And it took you four, and that was liberating.
Yeah.
You know, that was a really, an interesting.
So thank God you were saying it for 4 months.
That's exactly right. And I teach people about the psoas for years, and they go, so where is the psoas? You know?
Yeah.
So that there's, the reinforcing, I forget why I kind of lost my train.
We were talking about how the walking relieves pain, how changing the pattern relieves the pain in the body. That's how that question
yeah,
started.
Totally. lost my way.
That's okay.
But to get back to that on
yeah.
the simplest level is honestly, I'm just aligning the bones.
Yeah.
When you align the bones.
Yeah.
Oh, it was about how people do yoga poorly.
Oh, yeah. People
yeah.
do, exactly.
So
exactly.
when people do yoga,
and
I
had
I
a
use,
question in here about that.
So I, like with you, I don't do the same thing with everybody, right? But
mm-hmm.
like with you, I use bridge. And bridge is a standard thing for me. Bridge
yeah.
with a block between the thighs.
Yeah.
I think everyone overuses gluteus maximus in everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
We are tight-ass people and we
yeah.
need to let go. It's another of my main catchphrases.
Right.
We all overuse gluteus maximus.
Yeah.
So all of my yoga classes, I'm endlessly trying to teach people to get out of pattern,
yeah.
get out of habit. Because if you use it wrong in yoga, you're
yeah.
using it incorrectly to stand and
yeah.
to walk. You know, the deep lower back muscles, multifidus, and these incredibly important muscles. You know, do you know clamshells?
Yeah.
Like if you have back pain, if you've ever been to physical therapy, you know what clamshells are. Right? And now, no knock on physical therapy. There are brilliant physical therapists out there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I literally had to email a woman this morning and say, I am not positive.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, you're not doing the exercises that the physical therapist gave you correctly.
Correctly, exactly.
Very often they give you a sheet and walk away.
Yeah, and they don't teach people how to do them correctly.
Yeah, or they do it once.
Right.
And then they walk away. So yeah. I don't think many people are accessing gluteus medius, which is the point of clamshells, as well as they could.
Mm-hmm.
But like the deeper spinal muscles, multifidus, right?
Yeah.
In yoga, if you do yoga, you do a lot of back bending, you do a lot of shalabhasana.
Yeah.
And I don't think, so the way I teach that on the simplest level, right? I say, you know, I do a lot of the similar series, but I'll lay people on their belly, keep the legs down, like interlace your fingers behind your back or behind your head and lift the trunk up.
Yeah.
And I say, what are your lower back muscles doing? Are they shortening or are they lengthening? And invariably, unless you've been in my class 50,000 times and heard me say it, they're shortening.
Yeah.
That we compress. We come up into compression because we want height.
Yeah.
We think that when the chest elevates, you're in a back bend and it's good.
Right.
But you're in a bad back bend.
Yeah.
So you come up and you actually compress those muscles. So I say, now lay down.
Yeah.
Engage your lower abs.
Mm-hmm.
Pull in the belly. Come back up. You're going to come up less.
You won't have as... Yeah, you won't go as deep.
But
your
lower back muscles are going to lengthen. And
that's
a lot of what I'm trying to teach people. Like, there is a specific function to all of these muscles, and if you train them via exercise and standing and walking, you'll actually start to use them that way all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Still not easy.
Right. You know, and that brings me back to bridge pose, the what you showed me with the block, which I was doing that with Jenny. But the way, having that personal instruction, I engaged more in the front body, which here I am thinking, oh, I'm opening. Just, let it all go. I'm free. No, I engaged way more in the front body and bridge than I had ever done in the past. And that's what drew my pelvis right back into place.
That's exactly. Well, you know, and it's also aesthetics.
Yeah.
You're reinforced.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I have a crazy back bend. My back bend looks like it's a crazy back bend, right?
Yeah.
Because I can do things.
Yeah, exactly.
I can dislocate my arms, basically.
Yeah.
And it looks like I'm in a good place. And then somebody one day said, you're not doing that right. And this is long ago. And I had the wherewithal to step back and change.
Yeah.
And I used a belt and wheel forever, you know? But for the most part, when you do something that looks aesthetically pleasing... Your teachers are going to say, that looks great.
Yeah.
Even though it's not good for you. And from my perspective, it probably doesn't even look so great, but that's because from my eye, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of reasons why we don't get rid of our patterns.
Yeah.
Like, we are reinforced, you know, same thing. Like, stand up, you know, lift your chest and take your shoulders back.
Right.
Like, that is what you've heard your entire life from everybody.
Your
mother, your father, your aunt and uncle, if you went to the military, like, it doesn't matter. Stand up, take your shoulders back, lift your chest. So to not do that, again, like, for me,
I feel hunched over.
That's it.
And I'm perfectly aligned.
And you are perfectly aligned.
Yeah.
And again, for me, I'm comfortable being the opposite.
Yeah.
Right? But people aren't so interested.
Yeah.
And so reinforcement, cultural reinforcement, is a huge piece of a really difficult puzzle when you're trying to figure out how to age gracefully.
Yeah.
Because you have to go the other way.
Yeah.
You have to kind of...
Yeah.
And the other thing is, this is a really strange piece of the issue. In my workshops, what I'll do is, I don't know if I did this for you, but I stand how I used to stand, right? Which is leaning backwards and arms folded, you know?
Yeah.
And then I stand how I now stand, which I think is really good, right? But I tell people, there is no way you are going from old me to new me without actually leaning forward a little bit.
Yeah.
Without going the other direction. It's so subtle to go from what's old to where I am now.
Yeah.
You have to, in a way, be willing to let people think they're round-shouldered.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think people are round-shouldered the way they think they are. They might
that's
be tight
true.
In pec minor that's pulling the head of the arm bone forward, but they're not rounded over the way they think.
Right.
But I actually am kind of telling people, you kind of have to go there.
Yeah.
And people don't like that.
Yeah.
I have all these stories. Like, I had a guy came in, and he said, my wife is going to be here in halfway through, right? This was an intense dude. He had his sacrum replaced. He had a tumor on his sacrum. So he had a plastic sacrum.
Whoa.
Right? I mean, that's
I don't think
nutty.
I've ever even heard of that.
I mean, it's just nutty, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
And he's been in chronic pain, right?
Yeah.
So I literally have him bending forward
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
And he's walking around before I got him to go, oh, that doesn't feel so bad. Mm. Right? And his wife shows up.
Wow.
And she leans on the wall and she says, you can't walk like that. And he goes, but I'm out of pain. I don't feel pain. Because she goes, well, I'm not walking down the street with you that way.
Whoa.
And I mean, he looked odd.
Yeah.
There's no question. Like, yeah. I've ushered people out of my room saying, this is how I want you to walk.
Yeah.
And if you have to go to a park by yourself where no one is looking at you,
then, yeah.
to start to get into a new pattern. Because
yeah.
sometimes when you're in chronic pain,
yeah.
you need to be out of pain. You have to walk out of pain for 10 minutes just
yes.
so you can even remember what it's like.
Yeah.
Even if you look like Quasimodo.
That's how
you know?
I felt, yeah, the first time I implemented all these cues.
Right.
Exactly.
And the thing is yeah. that with you, you didn't look like Quasimodo. You didn't
right.
look so
I
weird.
I looked normal.
You looked normal. You walked in. Now, this guy, and I'm being honest.
Yeah, he did
he
not.
He would not have looked normal.
Yeah.
And I even said, you don't have to go. You're leaving here to go. They were, you know, they were visiting.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
they were going to the dinner in the theater. I'm
yeah.
like, you don't have to do it tonight. You
yeah.
don't have to, like, do that right away. But he actually had the incentive. He was like, but I'm not in pain, you
yeah,
know?
It felt good.
And it felt good, but
yeah.
she was like not having it.
Yeah.
Okay. Just really, really interesting stuff.
It is.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Well, I wanted to...
yeah.
We're at an hour and 15 minutes. I think people will still listen. I think this is a very interesting conversation. I wanted to get more to plug your core walking. I want to ask you, like, what types of feedback are you getting? And then after that, tell us a little bit about how people can access this work and access you. So what type of feedback are you getting from your clients? Because you work with people all over the place.
All over the world,
yeah.
which is really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like what I was saying about the video analysis is I see driveways and backyards from all over the world. Like, it is so bizarre. We got
yeah.
one recently from the Philippines. And it's
wow.
like, literally, there's a driveway and then there's the jungle. Like,
yeah.
it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, you can find me online at my website, which
yeah.
is corewalking.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I sell, you know, there are all these different ways that I've adjusted over the years. And one
mm-hmm.
of the ways I've figured out is everyone learns really differently.
Yeah.
So some people need to read. So
yeah.
I wrote some books. And some
yeah.
people need to see. So I have videos. And some people need to hear, which is what the
mm-hmm.
video analysis grew out of.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So it's just like my
yeah.
thing is I'm trying to appeal to everyone on a certain level.
Yeah.
And if you buy the core walking program, you get a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you're going to read the books because the videos might be good for you. And
right.
you might just do the video analysis, you know.
Yeah.
So that's like my main program. So I work with people,
mm-hmm.
If you're in Cleveland, come
mm-hmm.
on down, you know,
yeah.
but mostly it's online
mm-hmm.
and I do privates online as well.
Okay.
And then my other main offer is the SOAS release party.
Yes.
Which is, it's a workshop. And when I started the walking program, what I decided was people need to learn some anatomy.
Yeah.
We used to learn anatomy, you know, back
yeah.
in the 1900s, in the beginning of the 1900s, you'd go
yeah.
to school, you learned anatomy.
Everybody did.
You learned
yeah.
deportment. I
yeah.
mean, sometimes you had to go to finishing school for it, right?
Yeah.
But you learned something about your body
yeah.
and that's gone.
True.
So I really took a step back and said, look, if you knew how your foot was supposed to land,
yeah.
you're going to move better. You're
yeah.
going to get that to be reinforced. So the SOAS release party is half anatomy, like
okay.
the function of the SOAS. And then the other half is 90 minutes of release exercises.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because the core walking exercises are active.
Right.
They're not difficult. Like, my clientele is not young.
No.
You know, I could share them with yogis in their 20s and 30s, but really
mm-hmm.
it is 50s, 60s, 70s, right?
Yeah.
And I can't ask them to do too much. So
right.
it's five lessons.
Mm-hmm.
By lesson five, if you're still working with the exercises, you're going to get into some more advanced stuff. But
yeah.
there are people who literally just do the four exercises. I call them the core four
mm-hmm.
in the first lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, people are doing that for years. You know,
yeah.
it's bridge with a block between the thighs,
mm-hmm.
transverse work,
mm-hmm.
Pelvic floor work,
mm-hmm.
just really simple.
Yeah.
But then there's the SOAS release party, which is 90 minutes of
releasing.
Really
yeah.
getting down to doing very, very little to release tension from this deep muscle, the psoas.
Yeah.
So I usually bundle all of these things together.
Yeah.
Like, you can buy them separately, but I
mm-hmm.
usually put them together. And then I actually, in terms of anatomy, I have a membership program. So, like,
yeah.
today I have a lecture on sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been...
Yeah.
I haven't slept since I moved here. And whether it's the feng shui of my bedroom.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. I'm waking up four times a night, five times a night. It's not the pee, which is which wakes a lot of people up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really intense. And sleep deprivation, and I hike, you know, for 90 minutes or 2 hours. So it's not a lack of mood, you know, it's like, so that's been, so for me, that's great. I was like, I need to learn more about sleep. And I've written a lot about sleep. So I also have a blog, which I write on the blog.
Yeah, I've read some of it. It's great.
It's really fun, you know, and it's meant to be simple and as lacking in complexity as possible.
Yeah.
So the membership program is lectures and then 3-hour workshops.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm doing actually a walking one in 2 weeks and.
Uh-huh.
I do psoas, and we did hips last month.
Mm-hmm.
And then the newest thing I'm doing, which has been really super fun for me, is teaching yoga live online.
Yeah.
And that
is... That's part of the membership, too. You get these
That's part of the membership,
classes.
Yeah. So we're actually adding... there are two classes now, and it's on a video program. So it's, again, it's people all over the world, and I see you on a screen. And I can have up to 25 people on my monitor.
Wow.
And I just stand there, and usually I have somebody in the room doing the poses, because some people really like to see them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have someone in the room, and then I just go, do this, do that. And at first, it started because when I left Brooklyn, my students were like, no, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'll teach online. Like, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
And I've gotten really wonderful testimonials from them going, wow, it really feels like we're still in the room together.
That's great.
Yeah. Like people saying, I literally
forgot
that I was on a computer.
Yeah.
So that's another thing I'm doing. So, and for me, it's all self-reinforcing.
Yeah.
Right? Like I start with Tadasana in almost every class in the same way of get your legs underneath you and find your breath. And so I have a lot of different offerings, and the core walking is really pretty much pain relief thing. Like no one thinks they need to learn how to walk unless they're desperate.
Yeah.
It's such a strange thing. Like I've worked with healthy athletes who want to improve performance. That I've gotten a lot of. But there have not been a lot of healthy people who show up going, I just want to learn how to walk. It's really people they've run out of options.
Yeah.
They've been to a lot of doctors.
Yeah.
They've had surgery. They've had cortisone shots that don't work, you know. And that's when, as a last resort, at 2 a.m, they find my blog.
Yeah.
And they sign up, you know, and that's fine by me.
Yeah.
But I think everyone needs this stuff.
Yeah, I've been telling a lot of people locally who have pain in their body or have recent surgeries.
Right.
Because of their patterns. I'm like, you got to readjust. You got to fix the way you're doing stuff. And I know the right person to help
you. That's great.
I don't know if they've come to you yet, but I
don't know.
Yeah,
I had a meeting with an orthopedist at the clinic, Cleveland Clinic.
Cool.
One of the big top guys who had back pain.
Yeah.
And I said, yo, everyone leans back. He goes, I lean backwards to relieve my pain. I said, no, that's habitual.
You
just lean into your tightness.
Yeah.
But I think people do that all the time. People stretch counterintuitively.
Yeah.
In other words, they do what thinks relieves their pain, but it only reinforces their tight muscles.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really address what they need to change.
Absolutely.
That's really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought again. But that was a very interesting meeting with the orthopedist because he was like, I don't really know what to do with you. Because essentially for me, what I said to him was, anyone with hip replacement surgery should be getting walking lessons.
That's exactly what my friend just had his hip replaced.
Yeah.
He's 52 years old.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. My sister had it at 57.
Yeah.
From congenital things at birth. And
he said it's from too many Grateful Dead shows.
It's very possible. Yeah. It is very, you never know what it is.
Yeah.
Right.
But
so he should learn how to walk.
Exactly.
There's no question about it.
And then he just threw out something else in yoga. Like about, you know, as soon as he was given permission to go to yoga class, then he just hurt his back.
Well, because he has a whole new body.
Exactly.
He has no idea how to work with the body that he has now. That happens all the time. That's like, you know, I love Rolfing.
Yeah.
There are people who you go get Rolfed and, you know, very often they'll say, don't do anything for a day.
Yeah.
But you go and you feel really good.
Yeah.
And you have extra room somewhere and you go use that extra room that's not ready to be used and you blow something else out. Or people don't realize that the compensation for the left knee gets injured.
Yeah.
And you compensate for that injury, which is normal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then you heal that injury, but then the right knee starts bothering you a month later. And and unless you're me or in this world, you don't put it together. You think you have a whole new injury.
Yes.
Right? When it's really about a compensatory issue from the first thing that happened.
Yes.
You know, and compensation is normal. Like, you can't sprain your ankle and not limp around.
And not walk funny,
right. It's just that when it's done, you have to get back to the original pattern. Nobody does that.
Right.
You know, nobody does that. It's really kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he needs to learn how to walk.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll wrap it up.
Very good.
Any final thoughts that you would want to share with somebody maybe who would need this work or why walking properly is so good for you?
Well, you know, well, for one, thank you so much for doing this. It was super fun.
Good, thank you.
It's just about aging gracefully.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you're injured or if you're not injured. It's about how well you want to age, you know, and the things that add up to aging are eating, sleeping, and moving.
Yes.
And if you can figure those three things out, you're pretty good to go.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not everyone figures out sleeping or eating, right?
Yeah.
But moving is something that not everyone really pays enough attention to. And where we started with that idea that you think you move well, so you're always habitually reinforcing whatever patterns you have, the ability to take a step back and say, oh, wow, I'm going to actually make a project of changing these patterns with the goal of aging well.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty worth it.
That is definitely worth it. That is very well said. I'm a perfect example of that. So thank you.
I love it. Thank you, Jen.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.